Welcome to the Keel Hauled Podcast. I'm your host, Captain Logan, and we've got a lot of Sea of Thieves news to cover today. So tie yourselves to the mast and hold fast. Ahoy there, pirates. I hope you had yourselves a good week and a good weekend. I know I did. This week, we don't have a whole lot of Sea of Thieves news to go over, so I am going to cover a few things, but also we have some Sea of Thieves adjacent news with Skull and Bones. So we're going to be talking a little bit of that as well as season one has started for Skull and Bones fans out there. So sit back, relax, and let's get into it. But before we get into any of that, I have to thank the patrons because they are the ones that are supporting this content for your viewing. Your listening pleasure? Yeah. Anyway, they're the ones that are supporting the content. They're the ones that helped me get the new PC, which has helped save a ton of time when it comes to making videos, whether they be shorts or just the podcast in general, as well as streaming being something that I actually enjoy doing again because it doesn't feel so painful when trying to do so much on my PC that it just bogs down the system. So I wanted to make two changes to the Patreon call out. There was one that I missed last week, which was People's Republic. His membership ran out this week, and I missed his name last week. So sorry about that. And also Captain Hatchet, who is one of our old patrons as well, too, leaving the ship and going off for a while as well, too. So definitely miss them. I'm glad that they were able to support for as long as they did. But for those that are still supporting, let's get their names called out so that they can get the recognition they deserve for being awesome, awesome supporters of this community and the content that comes out each week. So thank you to LQ'd, Balls, Blue Turtle V1, Captain Chonky, Captain Hayes, Captain Longcharts, Chateau Neuf, Super Pack, Zombie Killer, Cloud, Cosmic Johnson, Static Mirror, Iron John, Davram TV, El Jefe Esteban, Fergatron, Godhammer 6, I'm Dependanow, Jorby Jorbs, Jay Hood, Carl Embo, Kazia the Aficionado, Cryptic Slayer, Lumpy SRQ, Evil Morpheus, Space Admiral Ores, Xbox Mike 29, Murphy Lives, Mutinous Max, Nipperkim, Norwegian, Raja the Brave, Regis Stella the Brony Pirate, Replicated Flame, Rust Belt Kid, Skamelt 666, Captain Dasm, Tommy D, TN Professor, Real Big Tuna, Big Bad Pad, Adorabold, Mina Fairy, Anthony N. Jr., Captain J. Rad of the Flaming Cold Sore, The Lore Chronologist Deadeye Dre, Hegger Owl, Jeff H., Evil Martha, Peter Miller, Rooski Doo, Thor Von Blitz, Luke Lore the Insipid Ghost, and Zam Wow. Thank you all so much for your love and support. It really does mean the world to me. I'm always sad to see folks go, but I always understand it is them first, me second. Don't ever feel like you have to apologize that you ever have to cancel Patreon. I totally understand regardless of the situation. I always just hope that you're taking care of yourself first. First up on today's docket, I want to bring up the Sea of Thieves news as there isn't a whole lot of like information that's coming out right now. We do know that for the time being, we are just seeing them kind of address some of the issues that have been coming out. They did go in and actually take care of the Athena loot that had been adjusted during the community weekend. If you listen to last week's episode, you know that was a pain point of mine. I still genuinely disagree with what they did. I think that punishing everyone for the sake of a small period of time where people were abusing this was not the right approach to go by this. It really did put a damper on a lot of people unknowingly who were sailing around. On top of the issues with crashes that I've seen on the forums, people having trouble with their actual game loading or staying like stable. It's been an issue that I've been reading over on the Sea of Thieves forums. I've seen a couple things on the Reddit as well. But overall, I think that they really should kind of take that into consideration, take the weekend's consideration into play. If people want to go and ruin their Athena grind by exploiting it during a time when it's the community weekend, then honestly, I feel like that's their choice. They're going to play the game however they want to play the game. Don't really harm other people who aren't aware of that. It really does put a bad taste in my mouth. I did want to have a correction, though, because I did see that one of the things that did come out of the weekend was actually a really nice the Games Blast that came out of that, which was Game Blast 24 or for 2024 for special effect. They did hit at this point. They are now at 40,000 pounds when the goal was 35,000 pounds. So they had a really good time celebrating and raising money for special effect, which if you don't know, special effect is one of the communities out there that is a nonprofit. It's the UK's biggest charity where they effectively help physically disabled gamers through bringing technological innovations to help augment their game style so that they can actually enjoy gaming, whether it be controllers or things like that. Really good cause to be raising money, and Special Effect has a really good partnership with Rare. And I was really happy to kind of see, you know, some really positive stuff come out of the community weekend when my perspective had been skewed because I hadn't been involved with any of the streaming for Game Blast. It was kind of a surprise to me. So it was kind of cool to see that. But just from my feedback, it was frustrating with the Athena changes that they did midstream for me. So that is now back in order. Everything's temporarily been or the temporary reduction has been removed. And overall, I'm glad that they did that. They did not address why it was being done. From what I can gather, there's a fix that's coming that will kind of patch this exploit that was introduced with season 11 when dives were introduced. It's one of those things where I would say if you don't know how to do it, then there's a good chance you're probably fine. I don't even know that they'll actually even punish anyone. I was talking to People's Republic about this in DMs, and the general consensus was that I figured exploiters should probably be punished to kind of teach them a lesson if they're purposefully exploiting. His perspective was is that would be a little bit too far. Like they don't, you know, it's not their fault that Rare introduced bugs that would cause this. It's just normal gameplay. Don't ban them for something like this. And I personally think that's, you know, I would have preferred to see like some sort of consequence as of this kind of thing. Like it's like, Alliance servers where people, you know, spike servers together. Those affiliate alliance groups were kicked out of the affiliate alliance group. So that was a consequence. I don't know if they got any kind of further repercussions because of that, but it's always interesting. I'd be curious to hear if I'm kind of going too far in this case, if they need to be banned or if they don't need to be banned. Should there be any kind of punishment for exploiting in this case? So it'll be interesting to see what happens when this patch comes through. We don't know when that's going to happen, but I would suspect that given that this patch is already done, they are probably working on a patch and testing it. We will most likely see whatever the mid-March update is, if there is a mid-March update, which I'm kind of assuming there will be, given that it's going to be the 6-year anniversary of Sea of Thieves. If they don't have some sort of patch around the 20th, it would be the first time. I think that they haven't really done anything to celebrate the game's anniversary. So I would imagine whatever they're having planned for that, they will probably put in the patch for the actual exploit to dupe items or get those items to transfer over from dives. So we'll have to see how that goes. I'm glad that they have, you know, returned the values of the Athena loot back to normal, because I think that was something that was frustrating. And I don't know that I really need to go, you know, go beyond what I've already said for that, but good to know. Next up on today's docket, if you haven't been paying much attention to the rest of the gaming industry, you may have at least heard of these kind of issues as far as layoffs. There's been a broad sweep of layoffs that have really kind of been a plague on the game industry in the last year. Thousands of people have been losing their jobs. Entire studios have been shut down. there's not really anyone that's safe. Epic recently announced that they have laid off a bunch of people. Sony laid off about 8% of their workforce. Xbox laid off about 8% of their workforce. There's Embracer has been trying to liquefy or liquidate their assets as quickly as possible by trying to sell off companies like Gearbox and Crystal Dynamic, and just they've been trying to get rid of as many studios as they can because they've realized that they bought in too fast, the games are taking too long, and they aren't getting any return on the investments that they made or the IPs that they purchased. So it's kind of frightening out there to think that this is something that is not really in. And when I mean that layoffs are happening everywhere, I mean like the studio Insomniac, they made Spider-Man 2, which has sold millions of copies. And even they were impacted by layoffs from Sony. So at this point, not even making a good game is enough to keep a studio safe from layoffs. As we creep closer and closer to the end of the financial year for or the fiscal year for a lot of game studios and publishers, they're going to be looking to try and cut costs where they can so that they can still remain profitable, because at the end of the day, that's what matters. Sony is not making much margin on their games or their consoles at this point. They're operating at a sliver of profit, which is not sustainable. Same thing with Xbox. Xbox is still having to do that. That's why we're seeing things like Sea of Thieves go to other consoles. And at the end of the day, you would hope that the studios that you care about because of the games that they make would not get hit by this. And I was talking with some devs privately about just the industry in general, and they're concerned. You know, and I think that's safe to say. I think it's safe to say that it is concerning from anyone in that role that layoffs could potentially happen. As I see it right now, Rare is being pushed out into PS5. And a lot of people are speculating that the reason for that is because the game just isn't growing as a community. You know, there's not any more new people really venturing in at a larger rate than the people leaving to play other games. And I kind of wonder if part of that is the state of the game or the content that it has. Because for me, at least, I feel like Sea of Thieves is in need of addressing their story and their playground. We don't have anything right now in the sandbox that's really changed what we do. We kind of just do the same thing that we've been doing for quite a while. We just now have a lot more bars to fill, whether it be reputation or captaincy or guilds, hourglass. We have growth. We have area to grow in the loop that we're playing, but we don't really have any new tools that are changing up what we do. The latest edition, I guess you could argue, would be the Skull of Siren song. But effectively, that is not much different and much harder to warrant holding on to than an Ashen Lord skull, which does the same thing. And now that the value of that does not deplete, the more you use it, there's really no difference between the two. So even the value behind the Skull of Siren song, which was, you know, being able to have something that you could use like an Ashen Wind skull, is now, you know, the value of that has been lost. So I'm very kind of concerned about the kind of overall health of the game, and looking at what Xbox is looking to do, they're looking to give it a new opportunity into a new ecosystem or a new platform that was not originally there. And that helps to an extent. You'll see a good spike in people coming into the game, and it'll be really nice. We'll have a lot of folks trying it out and giving it a shot. There is going to be a barrier to entry with this, which is going to be, you know, the cost of the game, which will always kind of stop some people. With it being in Game Pass, it's a little bit tougher to gauge that kind of a scenario. But I was actually kind of, thinking that now would be a good time for them to really kind of introduce some fun tools into the sandbox. But the reason I kind of brought this all up was because with Sea of Thieves not really having much growth, at the moment, I think that just over on Steam charts alone, the majority of people playing on a 48-hour basis is somewhere in the neighborhood of 14,000 to 15,000. Well, no, yeah, 14,000 to 15,000 people concurrently playing on Steam. And knowing that PCs, Steam is roughly probably about 20% to 40% of the PC player base, because most are probably playing on Windows PC through the Game Pass, or just purchased it through the Windows Store. And then you add the other half of that, which is the Xbox section, you're looking at roughly around 30 to 40,000 concurrent players at any given time during peak times. The all-time peak was 66,000, which is, you know, we're about roughly half of what the all-time peak for Sea of Thieves was on Steam. So it's going to be a good shot in the arm for Sea of Thieves, one that is probably needed. But the other question then comes to mind, what is going on with Everwild? That game got announced in 2019 at XO, in November or December. And it was one of those things where a lot of us were very excited about what that game could be. A lot of us were kind of concerned as well, too. We weren't too sure what was going to happen with Sea of Thieves. You know, Rare's never really made a live service game, and they've never made two games at the same time. As far as I know, they've always kind of had one project. And then when that project is done, they tend to move to the next one, with some slight overlap, I would imagine, through just production and teams addressing different parts of a game's production. And to kind of look at now, you know, we're about 5 years removed from the announcement of Everwild. We really haven't seen anything from that. I'm actually going to take a quick look. I know that I just recently left the Discord for Everwild, because to be perfectly honest, there's not really a whole lot going on over there. There's not really a reason for there to be anything going on over there, because we really haven't actually had any announcements for Everwild. And the latest thing that we've seen, I'm looking at the videos over at Rare's channel on YouTube. The Everwild Eternals trailer had a director's commentary that was 12 minutes long. It's got 66,000 views, which is roughly about the all-time peak of Sea of Thieves on Steam, ironically enough. And it was released 3 years ago, so 2021. The original trailer was, there was a showcase in 2020, which was the at the Xbox showcase. And I really don't know what's going on with that game. We've heard that there's a fair amount of change that's happened with the team as well as the direction of the game. But with no update, it really does make me wonder if potentially there has been a cancellation in that. Just given the nature of what's going on in the industry, a lot of companies are looking to try and cut costs. A lot of projects have been cut. And I wouldn't be surprised if secretly Rare ended up having to cut Everwild to support Sea of Thieves and just bring that team back in to continue working on it. Because otherwise, I'm not sure what that team has been doing this whole time. But the reason I wanted to bring this up is a bit of a down note, because while Sea of Thieves, while Rare themselves, as far as we know, have not had any layoffs, which is thankful, because I would hate for some of my friends over there to actually get laid off. It'd be really painful to have to hear that. We did find out that one of the studios that helps Rare, Radical Forge, has had layoffs. And this actually comes to us by Tom Ivan over at VGC, who actually does pretty decent articles out there, from what I can recall. They said that the Middlesbrough, UK-based indie studio said in a message posted on X that it was, quote-unquote, restructuring to continue operating in the current challenging market. Which, boy, if ever there was a statement that encompassed what's been going on, the bleeding of talent from studios and publishers right now, that is a phrase that just encapsulates it for shareholders. Radical Forge was founded in 2017. They are also co-developer credits for Gang Beasts, which is a pretty fun game. Rust, the console edition, which I know is very popular on PC. And Zombie Army 4, which is actually a pretty good game. It released its first original IP, murder mystery narrative puzzler, which was Brightpaw in 2020. They said, we've announced some restructuring at Radical Forge to continue operating in the current challenging challenging market. The company said this will mean that there will be a handful of people whose roles or skill sets are no longer needed on current or upcoming projects, and their contracts will end earlier than anticipated. The situation is heartbreaking for all involved. We are a very close-knit company and proud of the people-focused culture we have created. We will do everything we can to ease the situation of anyone affected and help them find alternate roles. Radical Forge said that the restructuring won't impact the delivery of any existing projects. It's currently working on physics-based farming game Southfield, which is, quote-unquote, coming soon to Steam Early Access. It's also set to self-publish the game, which is funded by Private Division Development Fund, which, if you don't know, Private Division is a publisher that does a lot of ports to other games. So I think actually they had the rights to publish Outer Worlds onto Switch and PS4. So when they say that it's not going to impact any existing projects, I do wonder if how accurate that is, you know, because we don't really know like what scope they really have for Sea of Thieves, whether it's just a kind of building products or helping develop items, content for like the Emporium. We don't really know like what Radical Forge's role is in all of this, but I am sad to see that happen. I know that there was the London studio in London that was part of PlayStation this last week. That was actually just straight up canceled. They just all their I believe it was a reported on as a Twisted Metal live service game that was just shuttered, and so was the studio, just days after Jim Ryan had actually visited the actual studio as kind of a farewell to for his retirement. And really sad to see that it's going to be something that continues to happen. So I wanted to bring this up because while I don't know if Sea of Thieves is in danger or if Rare is in danger of having to make cuts, because they did just have that big barn expansion on the actual studio plot. I do hope that there is an opportunity for them to just continue keeping all the people that they have. I don't remember the last time Mike had put out a tweet about them hiring at this point. So I would not be surprised if they're in a bit of a hiring freeze, but at the same time, it could just be that, you know, right now that's not something that they're really needing to do. Actually, I know where I can probably find that information. So that information is probably going to be on their website. It's probably going to be down at the very bottom. If you scroll all the way to the bottom, they usually have a Rare are hiring. Yeah, so they do have a Rare are hiring. If we take a look at the current roles, they have lead animation programmer, which is a permanent position. They also have speculative applications for art, design, engineering, and production. Now, if I go into this, they're looking for someone that has practical experience with ZBrush, Photoshop, Illustrator, and Maya, focus expertise. And unfortunately, we are unable to offer short-term work experience placements at Rare if you're soon to graduate or recently graduated. Okay, so based on this, it looks like they're still, I don't know what a speculative application is. That seems like a very odd thing to need. But it could mean that they're continuing to work on Everwild. But I just don't know why they haven't shared any information about that. But overall, we haven't heard that they are closing it. So, and they still have it listed as one of the games that they're working on as of now. But then again, I don't actually know if this website has been updated in the last few years, to be perfectly honest. But I wanted to let you guys know it's a thing, unfortunately, and hopefully it won't be something that really impacts Rare. But we'll have to see, because we still have a 6th year anniversary coming up next month, or I guess this month. Gosh, it's already this month. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, technically, yeah, it's March already. So next month we have the PS5 launch, and we'll have to see how that goes. I'm really hoping that PS5 players give this a game a chance. And I really hope that Rare focuses in on some of the bigger issues with some of the bugs that they have, and just really get those critical errors and pain points taken care of before this launch happens, because otherwise it's going to be a bloody wedding, and I don't want to see that at all. All right, pirates, if you heard that music, you may know what that's about. And we're going to be talking Skull and Bones, because I know a fair few of you are actually getting into it. A lot of you are very curious about what this game is like. And we just got the first season pass for season one for Skull and Bones. It is very interesting to actually see like what is going on with this game, what they intend to do with it. I actually kind of like the fact that we're getting a season one to kind of break down like what we can expect, as there are going to be 4 set seasons in Skull and Bones this year for the first year, which is almost unheard of with Sea of Thieves at this point. But Raging Tides is the name of the first season, and it brings in with it a new rival, Philippe Lepest, the Plague King, and his fleet of pestilence. This is honestly pretty cool, because in Skull and Bones, we do have things like flamethrowers. We know we have like dart launchers and torpedoes, and they have a wide breadth of different types of arsenal that will do different types of elemental damage to ships. And much like a lot of RPGs, you can build up resistance against those. But with Raging Tides and introducing the Plague King, you're now being brought in with a new tool, and that is Plague. Plague is going to be the new type of mechanic that you can earn. It is going to be the new type of damage that you can deal to other players as well. And it brings with it a new world event. So you can actually go out, and the first step is to kind of go out and take out some of the Plaguebringer's captain's heads, which are these smaller ships. And as you sink more Plaguebringer ships, you progressively anger the fleet of pestilence. And then past a certain hostility level, they may send an actual foe to you, which will actually be the world event. And then it's up to you and a bunch of other people to go in to collect a rare item that they carry. There's going to be kingpin bounties associated with those if you're a kingpin at this point, which is kind of the pirate legend version for Skull and Bones. And starting the second week, there's going to be from the March 5th to the 26th, there's a Jaws of Retribution introducing Zamaharibu, I believe is how you say it. And then starting week 5 of the first season, from March 26th through April 16th, there is a new bounty for Anguish from the Abyss, which is Rode Mangodon. So different kingpins that you have to sail out and take out. They're kind of, I'm trying to think of like there's an allegory to Sea of Thieves. Think of them as kind of like Ashen Lords or like the Mutinous Helmsmen. Like they're tough fights that you have to go out and take on, to be able to claim a fair amount of infamy, because once you hit Kingpin, it doesn't end at Kingpin. There's multiple tiers of Kingpin that you just kind of work your way through as you slowly increase your infamy. The whole end game to Skull and Bones is something that still eludes me. I'm still slowly kind of working my way up through my ranks of infamy, and I've genuinely been taking small dips in and out of it. I've actually been more consumed with Helldivers for a game that I've been playing lately, and I think that loop is very arcadey, and I've been really enjoying that. But this is kind of a nice thing. It's a free update to Skull and Bones, so you don't have to buy into it. They do have a Smuggler's Pass that you can purchase, but there is a free tier of that that you can kind of take part in without necessarily having to actually like spend any time or spend any money on it. I will say that some of the rewards for the actual like plunder pass that they have, season pass that they have, you can't actually earn the enough currency to be able to buy some of the cool things. Like they have a cat that has like, it's black cat and it has white paint on it that makes it look like a skeleton. And it's adorable. And I really want it. But unfortunately, the free pass, even if you complete all three aspects of it, it's not enough to actually get you enough currency to be able to earn that. And they've kind of broken it down by three different tiers. There's the Shipmaster, the Quartermaster, and the Gunnermaster. And each of those is going to have different cosmetics that you can unlock, whether they be sail types, sail colors, hull colors, access to different items. So if you need like springs for building, there's the Quartermaster has those. It also brings along with it different cosmetics for yourself as well as the crew. And overall, just a good way for you to kind of slowly earn a content for the game. There's a free seasonal armor called the Wailing Ward, which is a hull type that you can earn as well through the Quartermaster. You can actually start to earn the there's an equipment called the Le Potence schematic, and then there's the Gunner Master, which allows you to get the new cannon, which is the carronade, I believe is how you pronounce it, that you can kind of use in combat as well too. I love that they're doing this. I think it's really kind of nice to add a little bit of flavor to the already understood mechanics of Skull and Bones, where you're kind of leveling up your ship through the items that you're getting. And while I won't go into major details about like what's actually going on with each of these different items, I do like the fact that they are introducing new quests, a new world event with the Plague King, and a new kind of flavor to Sea of Thieves. Like this whole flavor is the plague rising or raging tides. So we haven't seen anything like this with Sea of Thieves in a while. It feels like every season that comes out is kind of focused in on maybe like one main thing. So like Captaincy is going to be the main thing, and then Hourglass is the main thing. But this looks to not only introduce like a world event, but also give you some story behind it as well too. So the story for Skull and Bones, obviously their campaign's pretty light. I'm not going to lie. It's not the deepest out there. But I love what they've done with this character. They've said that this guy, from the Caribbean who had nothing, wanted to become something, became one of the greatest Caribbean pirates that he possibly could. He managed to like overtake most of the riches in the Caribbean, but with that came the fear of death, and he was driven by this to try and find a way to survive. So what he ended up doing was he went out and actually started to like go and confront all of the shamans in the Caribbean that he possibly could, basically telling them like, you need to figure out how to make me live forever. And when they refused, he ended up burning their tribes down. Like he laid waste to all of their homes. And as their like last dying breaths, they ended up cursing him with this plague. And what did he do in return? He ended up nailing their corpses to the figurehead, to the front of the ship, so that they would send a message that anyone who messed with this now plagued captain would be a result. So now that he's this cursed captain, he hears whispers that there's a cure for this curse over in the Indian Ocean, and he's decided to make a trek with his fleet from the Caribbean over to the Indian Ocean, where now he is coming in as this pestilent this pestilence that is kind of like coming in as a world event. I think it's fantastic that they're doing something like this. It's something that I think Sea of Thieves really needs to kind of stand up and take watch of. There's not a whole lot to it. It's a dude who obviously had power. He He was cursed. His curse was a plague. Like, come up with a concept of a thing that you want to create, a tool that you want to create, build a story about it, have it introduced into Sea of Thieves, and leave it at that. You know, leave it as like, you have to conquer this. And when the season's done and you've beaten the Plague King, you get to learn how to harness the power of the plague. And then just whatever that is in Sea of Thieves, just have it translate. Have that season be a new season where you can have these little onsets of, you know, baddies that aren't conspiring with each other to overthrow and take over Sea of Thieves. Like, it doesn't have to, not everyone in Sea of Thieves has to take over Sea of Thieves, fam. Maybe sometimes some people are just a little more dangerous than others, and we maybe want to stop them for that. Like, I feel like that's a good enough reason to fight in Sea of Thieves. Like, I don't like the sovereigns coming in and just kind of setting up shop. That was a little weird, but that was a perfect opportunity to be like, hey, there's a big ship coming in. The trade company that it's been, I don't know why I'm blanking on it right now, because I keep just wanting to say, because I've been watching videos for both, I've been wanting to say the East India Trading Company, because the Skull and Bones has like changed the name of what theirs is as well too, because nobody wants to say the East India Trading Company. But the Sea of Thieves version of it, that's in the comics, which I'm not going to dig out at the moment, is a perfect opportunity to be like, hey, the sovereigns have told tale that there's a galleon that's bigger than any galleon possible, and they're planning to infiltrate the Sea of Thieves to see if they can lay claim to some of the value or the riches that are trapped here, and kind of capture some of that magic to take back to the mainlands. The Sea of Thieves is in its own little world, you know? And just every once in a while, like a world event, you have this giant ship that comes in from one of the edges of the map, and it just starts sailing around, gathering up treasure, getting ready to leave the Sea of Thieves with all that it's stolen. And it's up to you and a bunch of other people to try and take it down, or to take other people down and then try and sink it yourself. And whoever sinks it wins the treasures that they've taken, you know, wins all of the stuff. It's like, imagine if there was a skeleton fleet that was just one ship, one beast of a ship. And that was the seasonal content. Like, they brought in that and they're like, all right, well, we're going to leave some clues to kind of uncover some news about this. And it's going to lead up to them coming in. And for a fair hot minute of this, of the actual season, it will just murder relentlessly. Like, there will be no quarter drawn for anyone that comes up against this ship. And it isn't until, you know, like the story progresses and people are like, oh my God, I'm sick of this ship. It just sails around and murks us. Can't get anything done. That halfway through the season, they're like, We figured out how to penetrate it. We've introduced a new type of weapon, a type of secret keg that will cause a chain reaction and ignite the gunpowder and the blah, 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 makeup story here. And you have to get it onto the boat to be able to do it. But the only way to do that is to actually engage with it and hope that you can sneak aboard with this keg, but you got to be careful because of this, that, you know, and you just build a mini story around that. It doesn't have to be tied to Flameheart. It doesn't have to be tied to the Brethren Court. It doesn't have to be tied to Ramsay or like Lassetti or anyone, you know. It doesn't have to be tied to anything. It just has to be fun. And I think something like that in Sea of Thieves would be really good. And I think that's what Skull and Bones is looking to do. They recognize that a lot of their end game is based around controlling the trades, having your areas that are kind of creating currency for you. And for all intents and purposes, like, that's it. You're good. You know, they know what they want to do, and they're going to have an entire year's worth of content that's like this. So, like, season two, Chorus of Havoc, they're bringing in a new battle that's going to be the Hubric or Hubic twins. There's going to be an event. They're going to have a new warship. They're going to bring in the Megalodon. They're going to allow you to manage your fleets. There's going to be new takeover opportunities. And then the seasonal reward's going to bring in more furniture, weapons, and ships. And then season three, they're going to do it again. I'm going to have a new kingpin to come in. a new battle, Li Tianying. They're going to have a Halloween event with new world events and a legendary sea monster that we don't know. It's probably going to be a Kraken. And then new major features that are coming in. They're going to have more new takeover opportunities, which are kind of like the big kingpin missions that I was talking about earlier. And then they're going to have the same kind of seasonal rewards. And you're never going to guess this, but believe it or not, they're going to have a season 4. And the season 4 is going to do what? It's going to bring in a new battle with a mystery rival. And it's going to be a Lunar New Year event. And they're going to have new world events. They're going to have a new major feature. They're going to have a new legendary sea monster and a new takeover opportunities. And you're never going to guess this, but the seasonal rewards, yeah, they're going to have new furniture, new weapons, and new ships. And that's just the first year that they've got planned. That doesn't sound like a whole lot of content. It doesn't sound like it's major. It's like four new events. New, you know, like actual themed events for like holidays and stuff. And then they'll have like new world events, but they'll bring in new features and they'll bring over new opportunities and a new like fight for like sea monsters. But we'll have to see how how year 3 goes. And if it looks anything like this, they may have a really good way to kind of keep life going in this game. Because right now, Philippe Lepest, that's like a cool guy. That's pretty awesome. I like it. The Hubert Twins is dispatched by the King of France. The Hubert Twins blaze through the Indian Ocean to seize control of it and eliminate any who stand in their way. Makes me wonder what their whole thing is going to be like. You know, if they're going to have, if the blaze that they say is going to introduce a new type of flame to the sandbox. And then Li Tianying, once the commander of the Dragon's Claw faction in the east, Li Tianying flees to the Indian Ocean to recover her standing after being disgraced before the emperor. And it'd be kind of curious, what does that mean for the battle? Like, what is she going to do? Is she going to try and take over the Indian Ocean to try and reclaim that honor from the emperor? That's her role. It's kind of like a Avatar, if you think about it, kind of like how Zuko had to go out and capture the Avatar so that he could, you know, get honor with his father again. But overall, looking through the patch notes that they have for this, knowing that the world event is something that people have been jumping into and that it's actually been pretty hard for people, I haven't seen a whole lot of people really just going in and soloing this content. The ships are restricted in power to level 12 up from 11. And I think that's great. It seems like they know where they want to go. It seems like they're going to be able to use this as a way to slowly increase the power cap, which used to be something that worked really well for games like Destiny and World of Warcraft. RPGs that, you know, like it's a live service. So new season comes in, y'all get to grind up to a level from level 11 to level 12. And there's still enough time and there's not the gap between people who hit Kingpin and are able to participate in these new world events is small. Like, you just have to get a couple levels. So I like what they're doing here. I think it's smart. I think it's a good outlook on what they want to do for the live service aspect of the game. And they're willing to actually give a fair amount of content just in the preview for the next year compared to what we've seen with Sea of Thieves. And it'll remain to be seen. You know, they have to prove themselves. They have to say like, hey, we're actually doing this and we're actually going to make sure that we're sticking to the 3-month cadence. So they've got some trust to earn there. But overall, if they're able to hit this 3-month cadence, which I think they will, because the content seems light enough that it's easy enough to produce en masse and they have time to be able to work on that hopefully by the end of the first year they can provide a year 2's worth of content in a preview to give us an idea of like what it's going to be like. But it seems like this is a good way for Rare to kind of look and see like, okay, well, how are we going to address bringing content to Sea of Thieves on an annual basis? Because right now we're struggling, fam. We already had our season delayed. Like, we were supposed to end this season. This season was supposed to end. Season 11 was supposed to end right around the anniversary of Sea of Thieves in March. Well, it is March now. Now it's pushed back to the end of April, another 3 weeks effectively. And that's kind of a bummer because we really thought that they were going to be able to stick to their word about trying to be better about like making sure that content is delivered on a regular basis. Back in October, when they said, hey, trust us, once captaincy's done, once guilds are done, it's going to be all downhill from here. We're already seeing pushes back for the season, which is frustrating. So I'll be very curious to see how Skull and Bones does. If people enjoy this content, will that just give them free rein to move on to the next seasonal content? I personally haven't really seen anything negative about Raging Tides outside of just that it's hard, but I think that that comes with some honesty about the level of ship that you have versus the content that it's actually opening up. I know some people were having trouble actually getting the kingpin heads, or not the captain's heads, when they were actually sinking ships. So it'll be interesting to see how this kind of comes out. And I'm sure a lot of people probably don't care about Skull and Bones, but there are enough of us out there that have dabbled with this that I think it is important that we kind of keep an eye on this, because their seasonal content is potentially going to impact Sea of Thieves. Because right now, Sea of Thieves, for all the years that it's been out, still has trouble with a regular cadence. And part of that is just because they tend to make sure that the studio is not overworked. We don't know how much of that is actual truth, but we know that a lot of the devs there are happy with the work that they're doing. And we don't really hear too much about how unhappy they are, about how many hours they're having to work. So it's safe to assume that they aren't being overworked. But at the end of the day, they are still having trouble hitting these 3-month cadence windows for their content, if that's what they want to do. If they don't want to do that, then I really think that they should have considered moving away from seasonal updates. We're still not really sure what's going on with the store. I don't know that I'm actually going to get the coin that I bought back in December when they told us that there was a seasonal coin for renown that they would have for each season. And as far as I know, let me take a look here. Oh, the store is not actually on. That's interesting. So I used to assume that the store was actually on the website. Like if you went to the website for Sea of Thieves and you clicked up at the store, it would actually show you like merchandise. But I'm looking for merchandise on their website and they just don't have anything there anymore. They don't even have anything that's like, oh, this is coming, or oh, we're working on this. They just, that's just not a thing right now. So I'm a little frustrated about that, because I don't actually know how to check and see like what the status of my order is. I'll probably have to actually go and take a look at that email to see what's going on with that, because I'm pretty sure they took money. So I'll have to check on that. I'll get back to you next week on that one. But overall, I think that Rare needs to figure out what's going on, man. The messaging has not been clear. And I think that they need to really kind of maybe act a little bit more like a company instead of worrying so much about streams and social media engagement and stuff. I feel like the message is getting a little lost here. I think the reason why a lot of the videos that we've been getting that have resonated so well with us are when Drew is speaking plainly to us about the state of the game. Because at the end of the day, I think that's what a lot of people care about. But we'll have to see. Maybe I'm wrong on this. Maybe I'm stretching. But I'd like to hear your guys' feedback on this as well, too. Speaking of feedback, one of the things that I wanted to read out was actually one of our gold hoarders who couldn't make it reached out and let us know that they have some thoughts on this. And any of the gold hoarders that we have, you're always welcome to share your thoughts and feelings. If you're not able to make the recording, just let me know. I can always get those thoughts in there as well, too. But LCute wrote in, says, hello there. Thanks for this episode, referring to the community episode that we did, for this episode that opened my eyes to some aspects. I couldn't get involved in the community day. However, I think delaying the duration of a season again after the year we've had is a blatant disrespect to active players. It's like getting pulled over by the police for speeding, then, after apologizing, accelerating back up to 150 right in front of them. Regarding the very interesting discussions in the episode, I think it's one of the reasons why Sea of Thieves isn't ready for PlayStation audience. Rare still hasn't found a way to operate that respects their workforce and the investment of their players. They always seem to be patching holes in a rush. They consistently revisit game mechanics they themselves introduced years ago. They apologize for delays, then dive headfirst into another. They make decisions on the fly without communicating outside of a meaningless text on an external platform. I believe they are not ready because they manage their community like amateurs, as if they haven't been doing this for this already for 6 years. The game itself is beautiful and could be ready for PS5. Rare, on the other hand, is also is as ready to welcome a new audience as an overwhelmed mother managing her family and having to host her child's class for a birthday party. That's really the image I have. Sorry if it's a bit negative. Well, LQ, I think it kind of resonates with how a fair amount of us have recently been feeling. It does not feel like Rare is ready for the PS5 launch. And I think that the concerns that I have, that I've expressed, is that I want them to be ready. I want them to be confident in the game's state and have a plan of content that is ready to drop for that update or for that launch, as opposed to concern about whether or not the game is going to be in a solid state. And I think that's the thing that really kind of frustrates me the most is that I feel like their concern is about making sure that bugs are taken care of before the launch of PS5, as opposed to what's the really cool thing we're going to have at launch for them. And there have been some data mines on the game. If you haven't seen these, I wouldn't be surprised. But there is a suggestion that there are going to be some PS5 specific content that's coming for that game. Now, myself, I am most definitely going to be buying a PS5 copy. Not because I need to or because that's where I play, but because I really want to get any of the cosmetics that they might have for the PS5 audience. But additionally, I just want to support Rare in this effort to bring more games to more people, especially when they're going to be live action games where the bigger the community, the better off we're going to be. So we'll have to see how this goes. But I'm glad I'm not alone in my concerns. I just hope that Rare is being serious about this and not that they need to crunch, but that the state of the game should feel good, hopefully by the time like this launch comes up. Like, I'm really hoping that season 6 comes out, we get a patch, and the patch makes the game feel so tight that everyone's just like, man, it hasn't felt this good since launch, when there was very little interaction with stuff going on. There was a lot less content bogging down systems. People were able to do whatever they wanted, and there weren't any weird mishaps. And I don't know if that's going to be the case. That's what I want, but I don't know if that's going to be the case. So I'm a little concerned, and that's about as negative as I think this is going to be. So I'm hoping that next week we'll get some positive news. I really think that they need to kind of start talking a little bit more about what this season is going to be, as opposed to just what we've gotten, which is diving. Because I don't know that anyone... I don't know that that's enough for this season at the moment. Like, I think we need to understand a little bit more about what season 11 is actually going to be beyond just, hey, we got this prompt up for PS5 launch. All right, pirates. Think happy thoughts. Maybe we'll get some good news here in the future about some stuff that I've been thinking about for a long time. But until then, sit back, relax, make sure that y'all are taking care of yourselves. Make sure you're getting into games that you're enjoying and having fun with it if you're out there. I know that I know People's Republic and Untrue Hero in them, Chenzo, had a heck of a match the other night where they were getting just beat up by multiple ships at one time. They had a Galleon Reaper on them. They had a Sloop Reaper on them. They had a skeleton ship on them. It was frantic. They were just having a heck of a time out there. And it was tough, but they persevered. And I was really, really impressed with that. But people are out there having a good time. I think that's, at the end of the day, what we just have to remember is that while there are a lot of concerns that we have and issues, I know the game is in an unstable state. I know that people are frustrated by it, and I'm hoping that that will get fixed soon so that people can go back to just enjoying the content. But pirates, if you want to get a hold of me, there's plenty of ways to do that. You can reach me over on X or Threads at CAPT_LOGUN. You can always reach me in the Discord at Captain Logan. You can always find my gamer tag on Xbox. It's just Captain Logan. All one together, no spaces or anything, no abbreviations. And that's LOGUN. Otherwise, the show has an email address. It's CAPTLOGUN@gmail.com. Outside of that, I think that's it. So if you guys like the Skull and Bones update, let me know. If you didn't, let me know. If you wanted to have another topic talked about, if there's something I missed that you wanted brought up, feel free to let me know. We'll see if we can bring it up for next episode. But Pirates, that's going to do it for this episode. So thank you. I love you. And I look forward to sailing with you on the Sea of Thieves.